Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode number 358, marked by the passing of one of my favorite directors of all time, David Lynch. So that's your bookmark for you in our show for 2025. We're going to talk today about hiring real estate remote ISAs. And this is a subject that my podcasting partner, Jonathan, has selected. I've got a lot of experience in this area, so I'll probably be contributing heavily to this particular podcast. John, as we get queued up to talk about, to have a healthy dialogue about hiring an ISA, why don't you go ahead and explain who you are to those people who may not know?
Oh, thanks, Rob. I am the joint founder of mail-right.com. We are a online marketing platform to help you get leads in 2025. We do that mostly through the combination of Facebook and WordPress. We can provide services where we set up and run Facebook paid campaigns, or we offer a platform where you can do it yourself, linked to a fantastic website. Back over to you, Rob.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who may not know who I am, my name is Robert Newman. I'm the founder of the only real inbound marketing company in the real estate space, Inbound REM, and I am a lifetime sales guy who also these days focuses on SEO. All right, without any further ado, are you looking to hire a real estate ISA in 2025? And we've got a lot of different things, but I'm just going to rapid fire some pros and cons. If you're lost in the mix in your real estate business and a lot of low value activities, things having to do with your calendar, things having to do with phone calls, things having to do with follow up, things having to do with very basic types of marketing, very like repetition based marketing tasks, writing things, emails, I can go on and on. If the answer for you is yes, then I'm going to give you an equation that I've always used on the phone, John, for when people are trying to establish whether or not it's time for them to hire an ISA. It's pretty simple. You take your income for the last calendar year, 2025, and let's say it's $300,000. You make the assumption, and this is oftentimes not true for many of you. You either worked more or less, but you have to start with a baseline. So you take 40 hours a week plus however many weeks you felt you worked. So if you worked 50, you put 50 weeks in there. And then you go, all right, so I worked 10,000 hours last year. Divide that into $400,000. How much should I make? $40 an hour, whatever it is, right? Whatever the number is. Usually much higher, actually, for real estate agents. Usually you make a surprisingly high revenue per hour. So let's just say it's $125, which is about average across my account base. It's $125 an hour. So, John, once I've established that logic, breaking it down to the ridiculous is that exercise. It was created by Zig Ziglar, or as far as I know, it was. And that breaking it down to the ridiculous allows you to understand very carefully how much time you're spending. Should you be paying yourself $125 an hour to write emails? No, in case you didn't know the answer. Not usually. Or scheduling your calls or placing follow-up calls to low and medium quality leads. Absolutely not. All those things should be done by somebody else. And that is where we finally walk into, are you thinking of hiring an ISA in 2025? So if the answer to these questions are yes, you absolutely should hire an ISA. You can get an incredibly good ISA for between $5 and $10 an hour. And we're going to explain how in this episode. The first thing on John's list is screen for basics. Now, I would argue that if you've written a really good ad on Upwork, or you've done a very good job of looking at Fiverr, that you really don't necessarily need, number one, it does depend on the task. Many, many tasks can be run off a cell phone these days. However, if you're thinking of hiring an ISA part-time, like established connection, then I think these questions are valid, which is, do they have like a business level internet connection or reliable access to the internet? strong English language skills and strong thinking skills. Now, you pulled this stuff off the internet. Am I thinking that correctly, John?
My research for this episode, Robert.
Okay, so have you had any experience where you can illustrate, like it felt to me like number A, it felt like it might have something personal behind it. It was so basic, like I don't even ask that usually. It's such an assumption. Have you had an experience where you've tried to hire somebody and discovered they didn't have regular internet access?
No, not really. But I actually do think this is valid. I think having a checklist, because, you know, there'd be nothing worse than hiring somebody and investing some time in them, and then you find that they haven't got a decent access to internet connection. And I think you've got to check the, you know, they might have good verbal English skills, but I think you've got to have some mechanism to check their language skills, their written, their grammar, because they are representing you. And I think the last one is, I think really is quite important, but you've got more experience in this than me, is that there's certain, and I'm not being disparaging here at all, I think there are sizable cultural differences where people, I have noticed it in the teams that I run, which are more coding focused, and a couple of people that do help us with MailRite, is that certain cultures, there's a strong need to keep you happy. I know that sounds strange, but what I mean is they don't like any kind of form of confrontation. So they really want to keep you pleased. So they don't. And that's a two-edged sword, because they can just do stuff which you didn't ask for, or they can just go off and do stuff which wasn't agreed on, and they're not doing it out of malice. They're just doing it because they hope that will please you, keep you happy. So that's my bit.
So I have found the language and using somebody. So mostly, John, I hire from the Philippines. I have hired from Argentina, Chile, the Philippines, the Mexico, Ireland, a long, long list of other countries. And what I have discovered is I have pretty eliminated all hiring except for Macedonia and the Philippines. And the reason I've eliminated everyone else is because, number one, the income disparity between these countries and ours is great enough that talent can be found and hired. Like when I'm paying somebody $9 an hour in the Philippines, that is well above average for that country. They are making way more money.
What is the monthly average wage? I think it's around $450 a month, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Something like that. Like a doctor in their country makes no more than $10 or $11 an hour equivalent US. So when you're paying them nine, you could literally say to a Filipino, I need you to learn English better for this job. And if you're offering them $7 to $9 an hour, that is something they'll probably go do because it's worth it to them. It's a better opportunity. It's a greater opportunity. These days, people that are going to the University of Cebu and other places are focused on like their training to be like of service to people here. I don't know how many people know this, but the Philippines oftentimes ships a great number of their human resource to the U.S. to be nurses. They account for something staggering, like 30% of the registered nurses in the U.S. To those nurses, they send their money almost entirely back to their families. They look for in-home living nursing situations so that they can not pay their own rent. They eat here. They cover all of their expenses from the job, and they literally send every penny possible back to their family. And oftentimes, a single nurse is supporting up to 15 people back in the Philippines. It is absolutely nuts. It also creates a culture where there's a lot of sadness over partners leaving and things like that. But they're very religious in that country. So there's also a staggeringly low amount of divorce or separation, despite everything I'm saying. They don't do it. It's not allowed. So this creates a unique ecosphere to hire people that'll stay at your job that you're offering X amount of dollars for. And it is a very huge priority to them. And then Macedonia, which is where I have my entire development team located, it's basically a European country, but their average wages, for whatever reason, are a pittance of all other European countries. They are...
I think it is the poorest country in Europe, apart from Albania. I think Albania and Macedonia are the two poorest countries in Europe.
Which creates... I've had the same experience in Macedonia, except that they speak almost perfect English, and that their tech skills are off the charts. All the troll farms and everything else that bothers the U.S. that everybody's accusing of, Russia of doing. When you dig down into that, John, you discover that those farms are located in Macedonia. They're not in Russia. Russia can't afford to hire a whole bunch of Russians, 10,000 Russians, or they're too cheap. I mean...
Either they've left the country or they're dead already.
Yeah. So when you're looking for really talented tech people at a price you can afford, my recommendation is try Macedonia. It takes a while because most of those people do have jobs similar to the Philippines. Like my guy, my lead developer, who is nothing short of a genius, was working for... was closely related to the Russian mob. They developed a huge amount of black hat skills. We don't use them that way, but he's an incredible security expert because he understands how the thinking is going when people are trying to attack our stuff. And because of all of that, and because he's Macedonian, he's never once thought about leaving. Or let me rephrase, he probably has thought about leaving. He hasn't left. And he really could have, based upon his talent, his level of skill. But he prefers to stay with a single employer and build a relationship because Macedonia, if he gambles and he gambles wrong, he's in trouble in that country. So, that's what a U.S. opportunity is, a huge opportunity of almost any kind. And we pay him 75% less than we'd have to pay an American developer of an equivalent skill set. So it is also worth mentioning that you get a much better deal on these other countries in terms of money. But of course, if you really want to get the top value out of these people, you have to understand what you have and treat them the way that they deserve to be treated. My developer is an owner. So are some of my Filipino resources. They own pieces of the company because they've earned them. And just like me, for them, the golden parachute, $100,000 for in their local currency would be the equivalent of $1 million to ours. And it's a reasonable, that's a reasonable exit for these guys, which makes a company of my size, even though I'm very small and I'm very not high in revenue. Nonetheless, it's an opportunity for them, John. And so if you can provide anything like that, like a real estate business that you intend to sell out of at some point or something like that, then you should be thinking about building in another resource from another country. We're going to count that as number two on the list was time zone and culture, but we just talked a lot about the Philippines and culture. So we're going to say that we've covered that and we're going to go to break a little bit early, about 20 seconds early on the timer. And when we come back, we're going to discuss incentives, which I kind of dug into. Are you a leader? Trust your intuition and some final thoughts. So ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned for us, and we will be right back with you.
Do you you want quality leads from homeowners and buyers right in your own neighborhood? Then you need MailRight. It is a powerful but easy to use online marketing system that uses Facebook to generate real estate leads at a fraction of the cost you'd pay from our competition. We stand behind our work with a no question asked 30-day money back guarantee. So don't delay. Get started today. Go to mail-right.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's episode number 458. And John and I were just talking about, actually, I'm doing most of the talking right now. We're talking about thinking of hiring a real estate ISA in 2025. So let's jump into what would you think? So like if it was you, John, what I've done is very controversial. I have had a lot of people counsel against it. So what are your thoughts about incentives? Like, let's just say you have some people that you think are crucial to your business, do a great job. What would you offer them?
Well, I think, I've got a couple of developers in Vietnam that have been with me for about 8 years now. Can't believe that. And they're pretty good. It's a family operation. He's got a couple of people work for him all the time, but then I think he's got a host of friends and relatives, and then I've got a couple of other people who have been with me 4 or 5 years. I think it's that what I gathered by the research I did was that, you know, if it's just based on how many leads they can give over to you, that's not a very good incentive. That seems, because if their sales were orientated, they're just going to, or you're just buying into a call center, and it's the amount of so-called qualified leads that they're going to send over to you. I think you might be disappointed, where it's that they are really treated as part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
That even though they're in a foreign country and they're virtual, they are part of a weekly call where you're talking to the other people that are based in the US, and they really are treated as part of the company, and they're given tasks, but they've also asked for their opinion, their feedback, and they're treated with respect. That's what I gathered from my research, where you get more success.
Well, my team has been incredibly fruitful, incredibly loyal. I've had zero turnover. Only people that we've lost have been people we fired. Once somebody works for me, they have never quit. We do all those things. We have a weekly meeting. We talk to people. I ask for input. I don't just ask for input. I actually take input. Like, I actually do the things that they recommend, even though sometimes I don't feel like they're the best thing, which is weird for a leader. But every once in a while, if you want people to get comfortable making decisions, Sean, and become autonomous, you have to get them used to letting them see the results of decisions that they've made. So if it's not cataclysmic, I let the decision roll forward and let the mistake or whatever it is happen, or the slower process or whatever it is. The only exception to that is all things customer related, I handle myself. Like, I don't allow little mistakes there, but process and the way they go about things, and occasionally bad suggestions such as, can we use AI in our process? And I'm like, sure, up till the point it affects quality. So our AI experiment lasted less than 8 days, and then we had a complaint. So, and then we took it out of the process. But I let the person roll with it and told them, hey, you need to read the content. And they, oh, I promise, I will, every word. All right. And then no longer than 8 days for a client to catch it, say, this looks like AI, run it through an AI tool, for me to turn around and go, was that AI? The person to go, yes, it was. And then I'm like, and now you cannot use it. Anyway, are you a real leader? Wow, John, that's a hell of a thing to throw into this. How are we supposed to answer that? Like, I think I'm a decent leader. I try hard at it, that's for sure. Do you think you're a real leader?
I can be when I want to be. I can be an arsehole when I want to be as well.
Oh, you're looking at Elon Musk. It's the same goddamn thing.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that he's an arsehole sometimes, does he? I think that's about if you think you're just going to bring on a virtual ISA on, and they're not going to need direction and supervision and being bedding down and help and guidance, and if you're just going to use them as a black box, lead generative black box, and that's you're just buying a kind of human service, and that's your attitude. And I've seen this with some real estate agents that I've been involved with. Their churn of either in-house that are in the office or virtual ISAs is a constant churn, because they're not very good at taking the responsibility of their bad leadership, or they expect the people to be mind readers and just know. They're not going to know anything, and especially if they're virtual, either domestic or offshore, because they're not there with you. So they definitely ain't going to know. But I think you've touched on this, that you've spent a lot of time writing out procedures, everything's documented, every new person that comes into the company, you've got a lot of documentation, it's all planned out. Well, my experience with a lot of agents, they've got no documentation, they've got no onboarding process, they've got nothing.
The secret to success is twofold, I find, if you're growing an operation and using ISA-like resources. And that is having processes and having people that can that you can apprentice under. And definitely, John, in both cases, what has made me successful in both those areas is having material that is redundancy, yes, but, and here's the bitch of ISAs every time, and where most people fail, somebody, you preferably, has got to be the person that trains them to do things the way that you want. And you got to, that first person or that second person or that third person, you spend a gob of time with those people, like a ton. I've built quite a few teams in my career, and it is more time building the team than it is getting the result. Let me repeat that. There's more time spent building the team than getting the result. Once you have good people, getting the result to everyone else around you looks like magic. But that's probably because at some point you took the time to elevate somebody's skill level and temperament to close to where yours is. And if you, like, I've got 35 years sales experience, so it really requires a lot of time for me to explain communication methods, mirroring, how you want to respond to people, cushioning, never say no. I can go on and on. And all those things, yes, eventually they do get written down. You do create procedures around it. But at the same time, what's best for new people coming in is you assign them to somebody you already trained. And then it becomes easier and easier and easier, and the operation scales faster and faster and faster. Because at this point, I've got 3 or 4 people who do everything that do it better than me. But I did originally train every person, and they loved me for it because I taught them something new. And so it develops some way. It's an incentive of a kind. And you called it out in your explanation of incentives. It's an incentive because most of the people in these other countries, John, they get treated like garbage. Like, I don't think that we treat our coworkers all that great here in the US, but these guys actually get treated like garbage, like real garbage. Ignored, opinions discounted entirely, 100%, treated like with a rampant amount of disrespect, and yet their livelihood generally depends on 5-star reviews. So they got to take it all from everybody all the time. To have somebody come through the door that's willing to teach them, train them, add them to meetings, just like you said, it's an extraordinary thing for them. And of course they respond to it. They've never seen it. They don't get that. They don't get that ever. So especially if you teach them something, and then tell them how they compare. Because my experience has been with either teaching that nobody else is willing to teach. Boy, oh boy, do they throw themselves into it, John. They really, or the people that I have do, they break their back. I'm talking like studying on weekends, like they're already working 8-10 hours a day. Then they're going on the weekends. They treat my customers, honestly, I wish this wasn't true, but probably better than I do. I have 24/7 attachment to communication, which I think is a pretty good entrepreneurial thing. But when it comes to act like reactivity, I'm not available during those hours. But my team is, like, they'll see something come through and respond outside the hours I normally pay them for. And the only reason for that, John, I am convinced, is that they've been taught, they've been trained, they have love and respect, they feel appreciated and seen. And very rarely I have to give out like what you and I might consider traditional incentive, like front somebody alone, you know, something like that. Like, and it's always in line with, I think the biggest loan I've had to front out is a few $1,000, which was for an extraordinary situation. So, it ultimately, and I did it because I want to say yes, because ultimately my experience has been that you get out of these resources what you put into it. And all of like the 5-star reviews I have speak for themselves. It sure as fuck isn't me though, dude. It's not me. Like, did I build a great website? You damn well know I didn't build squat. I didn't build a website. I have people that built a website. Yes, I constructed the requirements in the original format. They've moved off it fairly heavily at this point. So I started with the outline. They've colored in it in themselves and created something really magnificent. I have no idea if that makes me a real leader. I'd like to think that it does. But real leaders also are usually more driven than me and have a different kind of viewpoint than I do, which is more money focused. So maybe I'm a certain kind of leader is what I would probably say, as opposed to a real leader. Trust your intuition. I have no idea what you meant by this, John, or I think I did. I mean, maybe when it came to choosing people, but why don't you explain what you thought when you put this on here?
Yeah, a few people mentioned this and I thought about it and I agree with it. When it comes to business partnerships, when it comes to personal relationship partners and that, it's normally, unless you're dealing with a real expert psychopath or a really intuitive psychopath narcissist, normally it's all in front of you. And for business needs, you're in a bit of a corner. You just decide, or you're attracted to a person and you give them more slack than you would. You just make, you know, in your heart, in your gut, that this ain't going to work out, but you rationalize it away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's normally, unless you're dealing with a skilled psychopath or a skilled narcissist, basically it's there, but you're choosing not to listen to your gut and to see the obvious.
I agree with that. Intuition plays a huge part into my people selection process. I really don't choose that badly anymore, but I think it's, I dislike strongly saying things that are egoic, but I have hired about 30,000 people over my career.
Can I ask you this shitty question? Would you hire me?
No.
I had to ask.
Depends on what role.
Yeah. That's all right. I'll let you go with that one. I just couldn't resist it. So.
I mean,
I was expecting to say no.
No,
you kidding, mate?
You'd have to have the ability to have autonomy, and that would be complete autonomy. So that's how I would view you. I would view you as
people. I can work with people. I'm not looking for an argument. Honestly, I'm really not. Because like what my, when my dad said this, many almost 35, 40 years ago, I thought, what the hell is he going on about? And he said, son, I was running a business at 24 and I was dealing with some rubbish. And he said to me, son, you don't have to go looking for trouble because it's just going to find you. And he was right. He's right. You don't have to go looking for it. It'll come your way, whatever you do. So don't go looking for it.
I think that intuition is tough to explain to people who are very used to telling themselves. Like, I'll give you an example about intuition. It took me a long time to study my intuition to be a mission-based like entrepreneur. And I made the mistake of not being a mission-based entrepreneur all the way, like the first 40 years of my life, always pursuing the money, made lots of sacrifices, nearly got myself thrown in federal prison a couple times, all for the sake of the dollar, the almighty dollar. It was always, you know, you have enough money, you'll be happy, right? Kind of. And I didn't really buy into that necessarily, but I bought into it enough that I made some compromise decisions. In this business, I've reshaped my focus to a very Ben and Jerry's kind of like thought process. Build a good business is good for the people that use it, good for the people that are in it, and good for the people that are around it. Make sure that's the thing you focus on. And then theoretically, you know, good business will come. That's
The way I rationalize it, just to finish off, because obviously you've got to be off. And I'm not overstating this. I think English, British and American culture is a bit different. But there's a sizable amount of these type of individuals in Britain. So don't think, listeners and viewers, I'm having a go at America. Because America's definitely got some strengths. It's just different cultures. But there is a minority in America that I'm going to be controversial here. Robert,
okay.
There is a sizable minority in this culture that would sell their own mother into slavery for some extra dollars.
Okay. All right.
Basically, that's it. They will sell their own children into slavery to make some extra cash.
Well, there's plenty of that in the U.S. too. I think that we're...
No, I meant that in the U.S., but I was saying that it's also... to some extent prevalent in Britain. So I'm not, but that's my observation. There's a sizable minority in this culture that would sell their own mother and their own children into slavery to make some more money.
Well, I'm going to add my final thoughts, leave it open to you. And then, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to give you a way to contact either one of us should you choose to want to. So my thoughts about ISAs is that legitimately once a real estate agent is making more than $150,000, there is very little reason that I can think of why you wouldn't have an ISA. Most of the time having ISAs gives you the opportunity to earn two or three times as much, not because you're doing something different, but because they allow you to focus on activities that are more impactful to the bottom line of your business. I think agents are always surprised when all these tasks are removed, how many of them there truly are. Okay, so that's my final wrap-up thought on my end. John, what's yours?
No, I think that I've got nothing more to add, Rob. I think that's totally spot on.
Okay, so beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to reach out to me to talk to me about whether or not you should have an ISA or talk to me about any other element of marketing your business in the digital world that we live in, especially with things like hyperlocal or SEO, then you can do so at robert@inboundrem.com or simply go to inboundrem.com. And there's obvious ways on the website to contact me directly. John, how would people reach out to you?
Oh, just go to the MailRight website, have a look at what we got to offer, and then just book a chat with me and we go through everything. And if you just want some general help and information on online marketing, especially with a focus around Facebook and WordPress, I'll be more than happy to have a chat. Back over to you, Rob.
All right, beautiful. That's the show for today. Ladies and gentlemen, join us next Thursday at 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. You can also message me or John if you'd like to join a live stream. We don't have that often, so we're not often conscious of time. But if we know some people would like to participate or at least watch the show in real time, we will join you and make a conscious effort to be in chat while we're doing the show.